Hi, this is Jen George Nickel from Cigar's Office of Public Affairs, and today I'm joined by Heather Robinson, our subject matter expert for security. Welcome to the podcast, Heather.
Thanks, Jen.
Now, you're the author of our security section in the quarterly reports we issue to Congress each quarter, is that correct?
That's right.
It's now been 17 years since the U.S. and its allies entered Afghanistan, way back in 2001. A question we often get at Cigar is, how's the war going? That's obviously hard to answer using any single metric, but since our mission there has been to rid the country of terrorists and stabilize it enough to keep them out, security is a pretty good metric to start with. Tell us what the security situation looks like right now.
I think the whole point of this administration's South Asia strategy, which was implemented back in August 2017, is to pressure the Taliban to come to the negotiating table and to obviously stabilize the security situation in the country. You'll recall that back in June, there was a three-day overlapping ceasefire between the Taliban and U.S. and Afghan forces. At the time, that was touted as a huge success, a positive move forward toward possible reconciliation with the Taliban. But following that, the Taliban stepped up their offensive operations against U.S. and Afghan forces, or the ANDSF, showing that everyone got a little too excited, a little too early. The Taliban then undertook a major siege on Ghazni City in mid-August and were only repelled after 5 days by both U.S. and Afghan forces and lots of U.S. air power.
Yeah, okay, I remember that. That was big news.
Right. So that means that this year there have been two major Taliban offensives on Afghan provincial capitals. There was the one in May in Farah City in Farah province in the west, and then again this one in Ghazni in August in the east. So while the military points out that this isn't bad, when we compare that to 2016, there were 8 attempts to seize provincial capitals in 2016. It still seems bad when the current strategy is supposed to be geared toward putting the ANDSF on the offensive against the Taliban. Even today, we're seeing press reports on continued insurgent activity in Ghazni and Farah, and I think that's concerning.
Heather, I think it's hard for some of us to appreciate how credible the threat is from the Taliban, right? Like, it's a constant back and forth between each side, expectedly saying they're winning or they're progressing. Are U.S., Afghan, and NATO forces pushing the insurgency back in actuality, or is the Taliban showing some staying power?
So unfortunately, it is pretty credible, the threat that the Taliban presents. We know this because we're seeing some bad news on the few security-related metrics of success against the insurgency that we currently get unclassified and releasable to the public. Those are primarily first district population and territorial control data, and secondly, I would say strength and attrition and casualty data for the ANDSF. Those kind of show us how things are going against the Taliban.
Okay, so start with district control.
So on control, I'd say that's arguably our most important metric to show success against the Taliban. U.S. and NATO forces recently provided us data that shows, unfortunately, that the ANDSF has really failed to move the needle on its control of the country. Instead, control is becoming more and more contested between Afghan forces and the Taliban. So to give you some statistics here, as of July 31st this year, Afghan government control or influence of its districts has hit the lowest level since Cigar began tracking it back in 2015, and that's at 55.5% of the country. Population control is essentially stalemated since May 2017, which is quite a while now. The current figures are that the government controls or influences areas where 65% of the population lives. The Afghans' goal for population control is to control areas where 80% of the population lives by the end of 2019, so you can see that the ANDSF is a long way off from achieving that goal. Contrarily, the insurgency controls influences 12% of districts and 11% of the population, and the large gap in between those statistics are contested districts and population.
You mentioned casualties and force strength, or the size of the Afghan force.
In terms of casualties and strength figures, the Afghan security forces are still facing casualty and attrition problems, and it's risking their sustainability as a force, which then, of course, risks their ability to improve security in the country.
Heather, can you drop some stats?
So as of July 31st, ANDSF strength was the lowest it had been in the third quarter of the year since 2012. That puts them at 312,328 personnel. This means the ANDSF is at roughly only 89% of their authorized strength, which is 40,000 personnel below their goal strength. A big part of this that we're seeing is due to this heavy casualties that the force has incurred this year. So as you may know, casualty data has been classified along with a bunch of other types of data that are important for us to know about the ANDSF for over a year. So when we've asked the military recently to comment on all these press reports that we're seeing and also Afghan government reports that we were seeing that ANDSF casualties were rising, they told us that, quote, from the period of May 1st to the most current data as of October 1st, 2018, the average number of casualties and the ANDSF suffered is the greatest it has ever been during like periods, end quote. That doesn't occur from an incredible insurgent threat.
Yeah, that doesn't sound good. Heather, you've been authoring the security section of our quarterly reports for several quarters now. Tell us what's changed in that time. Are there relative trends you've been seeing?
So unfortunately, as I mentioned, on the key metrics of the war, not much has changed on the positive side since I began writing about the security situation in Afghanistan in January 2017. District and population control have deteriorated slightly since that time, and the ANDSF has seen pretty significant attrition since that time as well. It's also very disheartening to see the human cost of the war. Civilian casualties, they're on the increase as well since 2017. Civilian deaths for the first 9 months of 2018 are the highest the UN has recorded since 2014.
Yikes.
Another thing to mention is that while our military officials are constantly talking about how Islamic State's affiliate in Afghanistan, ISK, is degraded in the country, we're still seeing the group operating in and planning attacks from more provinces than they had before, conducting attacks more frequently, especially in heavily populated cities like Kabul and Jalalabad. The UN noted in September that suicide attacks from May through August this year had risen by 38% compared to the same period last year. For this reason, the UN is obviously concerned by what they're calling a disturbing increase in civilian casualties occurring as a result of the attacks. On a more positive side, there have been fewer security incidents in the country thus far in 2018 than there were during the same period in 2017. The UN has reported that fighting is more concentrated on fewer select provinces like Nangarhar, Helmand, and Kunar than was the case previously.
Heather, on the data, I'm glad you mentioned that because it brings me to something else I wanted to touch on. There have been some issues recently with SIGAR's ability to report all of the metrics it receives from the Department of Defense. Why was that? What kind of things were you unable to report, and how did that impact your analysis? How does it impact our ability to oversee Afghanistan overall?
Yes, and this is an issue SIGAR has been grappling with since October 2017, when United States Forces Afghanistan and Resolute Support, the NATO mission out there, classified or restricted from public release a large swath of the data that they previously gave us in an unclassified, publicly releasable format. This, I think, has been one of the biggest changes and one of the biggest challenges that has occurred since I began working on Afghan security here in January 2017. And there were many other data points that I used to be able to report on to give insight into the security situation in Afghanistan. I'd say the data that's been classified that's most negatively impacted my analysis of the situation is probably the ANDSF casualty data, which we were told was classified actually at the request of the Afghan government. Almost all types of the data concerning the actual performance of the ANDSF. So this ranges from general performance narrative assessments about operational planning, fighting capabilities, etc., or it could be important information about the operational readiness of the ANDSF's equipment, for example. So there's this constant tension, I think, between transparency and what United States Forces Afghanistan Resolute Support feels are appropriate to provide us in an unclassified format due to the fact that a lot of this data is Afghan-owned and they're a sovereign nation.
Well, as an agency founded on oversight and transparency, that does seem like it would be a troubling development and potentially limiting to our work, as you mentioned. So to wrap things up, what does all this mean for the American taxpayer? Why, at the end of the day, should they care?
I think that with the issue of classified data, it's become increasingly difficult from the position of an oversight organization to paint a picture for the American public and for Congress about the performance and the capabilities of an Afghan security force that we all pay to train, advise, and equip. Our forces risk their lives. You know, we've invested an enormous sum of public funds. It's been $83 billion just to support the Afghan security forces since 2002. And this accounts for 63% of all taxpayer money going to the entire Afghan reconstruction effort. I think as we are nearing the beginning of the 18th year of this war, with a security situation that is far from resolved, the American taxpayer and Congress should be increasingly vigilant in asking for tangible results of what our taxpayer dollars are getting us in Afghanistan, and a transparent plan for how taxpayer dollars will be spent in the country moving forward as the U.S. continues its investment there through 2020 or afterwards.
Well, Heather, you've certainly given our listeners a lot to digest. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you for having me. It was great.
Thank you guys for listening to the latest episode of Operation Oversight. To read Cigars Quarterly reports or listen to former episodes, log on to our website at www.sigar.mil or check us out on Facebook or Twitter. This is Jen George Nickel with Cigars Office of Public Affairs signing off. We'll be right back.